This is the Bob McCallum Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the Bet Rivers online casino and sportsbook app today. Good day, everyone. McCallum here, John Shannon there. And we have a special guest for you today with us. Well, he's with us every day, but you just don't see him. He's our producer. Hugh McLarty is with us, who is in where in PEI exactly? Okay.
Charlottetown, Bob. You know this. It's Charlottetown.
I have no idea.
This is the magic of technology now. I mean, can you imagine on a regular basis, on a day like today, three guys in three provinces being able to construct content and turn it around quickly? It really is a story of where our business has gone.
Yeah, well, yet to be seen as whether that content is worth listening to.
Well, it took you guys long enough to get me on.
By the way, that's your part of the job.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, that you have to figure that out. But Hugh and I are happy the way things are going.
Okay, well, goodbye. I'll let you guys run the show then. I'll talk to you another time.
All right, John, what do you want to talk about?
Well, we can talk about March Madness. Bob's not watching March Madness.
Yeah,
there's no interest in March Madness.
Bob's not watching anything lately. Hey, I'll ask him. He'll come in the meeting. I'll ask him what he's watched recently, and it's best. It's I watched a bit of it. I watched a little bit of it. Like, come on.
Well, I can tell you, March Madness is not high on my list. I know they don't play early in the week. In March
no,
Madness.
I actually last night I yesterday afternoon I was getting ready for the hockey game I did last night. I was saying, God, I wish there was a basketball game on to watch in the afternoon. It would have been fun.
Well, then Bob, I got a question. If March Madness isn't high on your list right now, what is? Because this is the time to have March Madness high on your list.
Obviously. I watch very little college basketball this year, which is a rarity. And the schools that I follow, everybody follows a different school or two. I imagine you have a favorite, whether you went there or not. Well, I have a couple of favorite and neither of my teams is in the tournament this year. And usually they are. I mean, I follow Ohio State and I follow UNLV. And neither one of them are in the tournament this year. So
you're not a fan of college basketball purely as college basketball?
Not much anymore, I'll tell you, John. I used to be. I was, when I lived in Vegas, I was a UNLV season ticket holder.
Yep. But that was a team, though. That was one team, though.
Sorry?
Yeah. That was just a single team. You know, I mean, were they in the WAC or were they in the Mountain? Where were they?
Yeah, they were both from time to time. The truth is, you're probably right. I was a fan of those two schools and probably not the game itself. But it was also a time where guys were at a school for a long period of time and their stars were there for 4 years usually. Yeah. In UNLV's case, under Jerry Tarkanian, a lot of their guys came from junior colleges, so they're only there for two. But even at 2 years, you get to know a guy and you get to anticipate, you know, what's he going to be in the future? What's he going to do next year? And the other schools, you know, they had their guys for years and years. Now what you have is an endless variety of schools where their best players are there for 1 year.
Yep.
So you don't get to see anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because
I would tell you that I was in the same boat as you when it came to the sport. I grew up, I was a Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12 guy. UCLA, John Wooden, they were a great story when I was just a child. And, you know, fell in love with that style of basketball. But I became a college basketball fan. And I didn't care what the teams were. I loved the action of the game. I loved the mistakes of the game. I loved the passion of the fans. I mean, I've been to four Final Fours simply because it might be, and I've not been to a Super Bowl, but the Saturday-Monday equation for the Final Four is as good a sporting event as you ever go to.
Oh,
the doubleheader Saturday semifinals magic. So this year, I don't think I watched one college basketball game through the whole season. Not one.
Neither did I.
And then Thursday afternoon, I got hooked.
Really?
I got hooked. What's happening now is with all these upsets, it's really fun. And then we talked with John Oren yesterday. Now the dilemma is are there enough quality teams, recognizable top 25 teams, to drive the ratings and drive the interest until that last, you know, until that Monday night when the championship is won.
Here's something I heard, kind of to your point, John, that I think would be kind of interesting, is that do you think coaches and teams are going to start paying less, similar to basketball, where they take less into account the rankings during the year, the top 25 rankings, and it's becoming more and more common to see lower seeds upset the higher seeds. So do you think that's going to shift the thinking in terms of the coaches and not care about where they're seeded heading into the tournament?
I don't know. I don't think that's changed over the years, Hugh. I really don't. I just think that's something that comes up every 3 or 4 years when you do see these bevy of upsets, and people look at the games and say, "Wow, we've never seen that. We've never seen an FDU upset." Oh yeah, sure, there's been only one or two other 16 versus one upsets, yeah, but there's been a ton of them.
You could have predicted it this year, I think.
No.
Who's the best team in college basketball this year?
I think it was Alabama. I think it was Alabama.
How many games did they lose?
What, three?
Well, that gives you a sense. Look at, you know, if you go through the 1970s, 1980s, even the 1990s, maybe beyond that, almost invariably the best team had one or two losses. I mean, they were not just good, they were really good. The best teams were really good.
Yeah.
And almost unbeatable going into the tournament. UNLV had that undefeated season. Mm-hmm. You know, they wound up losing once and they were out. So,
one of the games ingrained in my mind is when North Carolina State finally beat UCLA after 88 consecutive victories.
Don't they have a documentary on that just alone?
I don't know.
Well, I think that's indicative of exactly what it was like.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The great teams were really great. And
that was also at a time when freshmen didn't play on the varsity team.
Well, there was that too.
So
you had to be a really good freshman to make the varsity team.
Wow. But there are schools. I mean, Lou Alcindor / Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played on the freshman team. Oh, he didn't play on the varsity team ever.
Yeah. Won't happen now. Of course.
Would you rather watch a college basketball team filled with the starting lineup of five first-year five-star recruits or five-year seniors?
Well, if they were Michigan, you know, of that era of the Fab Five, you know, you don't mind. But, you know, there's one Michigan story. There isn't anybody else. There isn't anything else. I don't know of another story of a bunch of freshmen who get together and, you know, I've been playing. No. Most schools won't allow that to happen. They won't allow themselves to be in a situation where they have to start five freshmen.
Well, unless you're John Calipari.
Well, I don't understand the circumstances under which you do that.
What if they're the best players?
Because you're not grooming to win the title. You promised the five kids, "I'm going to make you NBA players." Well, that's the bottom line.
How much do you think that has an effect, though? Like, do you think that's legitimately for those schools, like the big Kentuckys and the Dukes, where they have commitments to these guys who are first year, they know they're one and done. Do you think that factors into their playing time, where they know, the coaches know that these guys, they need their draft lottery to go up because they're declaring for the draft?
Yeah, I think it's part of the system now. I think it's part of the system.
That's interesting.
You know, guy like Calipari, my personal opinion is I think Mike Krzyzewski did a better job of disguising that.
Mm-hmm.
He also had the ability to recruit among the best players in the country.
So did Kentucky.
I'm saying that.
But only the
great schools are able to get these kids who are undeniable high school stars, mm-hmm. and who will be stars in college. And the game has changed so much. I mean, you know, used to be if you, you know, how senior was your team? Like how many seniors, how many juniors did you have on your team? Yeah. Well, now that is irrelevant.
We're never going to see that again, Bob.
No, I understand that, but it's irrelevant because your star players are all first-year guys, almost on every team. You know,
if you
didn't play well in high school, are you going to play better in college? I guess there's the odd case of that happening, but for the most part, it doesn't happen.
We don't have a producer right now, so we better go to break.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Thank you very much, John.
Okay.
Whether you like it or not, we'll come back in a minute.
I worry about you, Bob. I just worry about you.
It's McCowan, Shannon, and McLarty back after this. Hi, this is Bob McCowan for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the BetRivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com. Shannon, we are what? A couple of weeks away from the Masters in the golf season.
Yeah,
which is always the first.
April 6th. Yeah.
First sign of spring, really, for those of us in the north. It's kind of when you start thinking about golf again. And the winter has been, it hasn't been a bad winter. It just seems to me to be have been a long winter. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, our age that it gets longer and longer every year. But
it is.
Do you have a feeling like going into the Masters? I always like to see who's playing well. Who's the guy that could win the Masters? And I mean, do you have a guy?
I don't. I don't. But I again, I watched that that Netflix series on the PGA Tour and some of the guys going to live, and they did a good job of focusing not just on some of the stars, but on some of the guys that are down the rung. And right now I'm running into an issue with who should I watch? There are too many good golfers, and there's too many good golfers right now. I don't know. And what is the focal point? I mean, when you need stars, so, I mean, Dustin Johnson, whether you liked him or not, Dustin Johnson was a star. He's still a star. He will be able to play in the Masters. But you know, Thomas and Spieth, where are they in all of this? Are they big enough stars? The PGA is trying to make them big enough stars. Rory McIlroy has become now.
Well, he's the biggest name.
He's become the biggest name again. Remember, there was a time when he was a big name and young, and he was going to be the next Tiger. And then he fell off he fell off the face of the earth for a while because he couldn't win a major. And now, with what's been developed in golf and the world, he's become the spokesperson. He has become the best golfer. He has become, you know,
the best golfer. I think Rahm and Scheffler would have something to say about that.
I guess he's the biggest personality. Although John Rahm's a personality, I think everybody likes to see John Rahm get mad. So, and Scotty Scheffler, for what he is a great golfer. But there's not much to identify with Scheffler.
No, of course not.
That's a challenge.
We were spoiled during an era with Palmer and Nicklaus and Watson and then Tiger, and we have experienced greatness, and for lack of a better word, I think all we're seeing now is goodness. Like there's a bunch of good players, but is there a great player out there?
I think Rory's a great player. I really
do. Do we define greatness differently after Tiger? That's the question.
I feel like Tiger is on a whole different stratosphere, though.
Well, but he isn't. You know, I mean, you could say that he was the greatest player ever, but.
Well, the greatest player ever in his era.
Yeah, in his era.
Yeah.
I still don't think he was a greater player than Nicklaus was, and there are plenty of stats to back me up.
But people liked watching him, Tiger.
Well, that's different, though. But he created an environment for non-golf fans to watch because he was that he was omnipresent. He was bigger than the game because he attracted people outside of the hardcore. You know, you have the hardcore golf fan will watch every Saturday, Sunday. Well, actually, they'll watch every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that hardcore base was, you know, relatively simple to entertain because they like the way the game is covered and the way the game is played. But Tiger Woods brought in a whole new audience to the game. He transcended the sport. Roger Federer transcended the sport.
But he was different. Tiger was different. Even for the regular golf fan, it wasn't just that he brought in a whole new element. And I don't disagree with you, but I mean, his greatness was obvious.
Oh yeah.
As it was with Nicklaus, to be very honest.
Well, for someone like me I'm on the side of the soft fan of what John was saying, where I need a guy like Tiger playing golf in order
to be interested.
And we don't have that there. And I don't know.
I agree.
There hasn't been someone like that since Tiger, I guess. I thought Spieth was going to be at one point when he had his hot start right off the beginning, but he's fallen off a cliff.
Yeah. Well, everybody loved Spieth. I mean, he was young and he was great. I think that's what we want. We want a great player to emerge. And guys have gone out and had a great 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. There have been plenty of those guys. But no, who's had a great year or two? Right now, Scottie Scheffler looks like a guy who's on path to be that guy, or John Rahm. And to tell you the truth, neither one of them has a personality or a something that you can cling on to, at least not for me.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right, Bob. I mean, even just thinking about people who are going to be listening to this, they will be less interested in golf because we don't talk Tiger. You know, Tiger is a figure on his own platform, to Hugh's point.
Would we be in that situation, John, regardless, though? I mean, was Tiger so good and so dominant in the headlines that nothing that came after him would even compare? I mean, I wonder. I mean,
Well, the game has tried to find others. Even from the point of view of good guys and villains, right? You know, it was Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. We've tried to manufacture rivalries. We've tried to manufacture, and I say we, I mean, I think the golf community and the media have tried to manufacture these scenarios. And it was great for a couple of weeks to create interest. And it was great for a short period of time, but now it's evaporated again. Now we have this is where the second tour has almost watered down the interest. Is there enough interest in two tours to keep the whole industry going? I wonder if there is. I'm not sure I can watch as much golf. I can't watch twice as much golf.
No.
Well, if LIV did not exist, you know, those of us who watch the PGA Tour, I think we tend to put LIV down and we have no interest in it, and I don't.
Right.
But think about this. If these players that went to LIV, like there are 4, 5, 6 really great players who went over to LIV. If those players were still around, do you think the PGA Tour would be more exciting? I mean, do you think somebody from that group would be the next great player?
No, I don't.
Neither do I.
No, I don't. But what it has done is, you know, the pendulum has swung back to making sure the players get the money again. I mean, LIV has done what it was supposed to do for the players and purses.
Yeah,
that's what it's done. which I think Greg Norman's goal was a bit of that. But he, you know, Greg Norman was, you know, what he wanted to do was bring the tour down. And he's always wanted to you know, lower the blinders so that people could do much more with the game of golf. I'm not sure there's an appetite for it, though. I'm not sure in the end there's an appetite, at least in North America, for more golf.
Well, one of the things that Norman has tried to do, too, is change the infrastructure. Take a look at the 72-hole tournament and say, you know, is this the right answer? And he didn't. You know, he looked at it and said, 72 holes is too many. Let's play 54. And let's not have tee off times all morning. Let's everybody start at the same time and end at the same time. And see, for me, that is problematic. I respect that thinking, but I'm not used to that thinking. I'm not used to flipping on my television on Friday instead of Thursday. I'm not used to a 54-hole tournament.
Is that why you don't like it?
It's part of it.
You're not used to it?
Hmm?
Because you're not used to it?
Like, I think that's part of it.
Mm.
I think that was one of the mistakes that LIV has made, is it tried to change.
I think a big mistake, too, is the way they tried to change it. Because it, from my perspective...
Like how?
Well, the abruptness in how it was framed as LIV versus PGA. And I know we've talked about it a lot, but it...
Well, competitiveness, I don't think... I think that was done, but it wasn't done to gain fans.
I know that.
It was done for survival.
That's fair. Because from my perspective, I kind of, again, a casual golf fan. I don't want to come across.
Yeah, that. I get it.
I don't like LIV, but I do enjoy what they're trying to do to make golf more fun to watch, if that makes sense.
Like what?
Like, well, like the teams, they've got teams. The
teams is ridiculous.
I think it's fun. I think it's fun.
But let me ask you, Hugh, and this is the difference in our age.
Right.
I don't understand the team game. And I have no desire to understand the team game.
No.
Do you understand the team game?
I'll be honest. No, I don't. Oh. I think the concept of a little bit of that change in making it a little bit more competitive, I think that's what I enjoy about it, where the putting two teams up against each other. But I think I also acknowledge that it's an opinion from a fan who didn't like watching golf in the first place before any of the changes. So right. it's not any significant change. It's just like, okay, cool. This is a fun little knickknack in there. It seems a little fatty and trendy, though.
We should have learned before this that there are two kinds of sports. There are team sports and there are individual sports. And if you are an individual sport, you can't turn it into a team. The tennis has tried it with World Team Tennis, and it's been a disaster.
But
nobody cares about World Team Tennis.
The problem becomes, Bob, is that you look at things like the Ryder Cup, and you think, wow, the magic of the Ryder Cup. You play 3 days... Europe versus the United States, and you think this is magical.
I like it only because it's only once a year. You play the Ryder Cup, then the President's Cup. Isn't that the
right.
truth?
That and the what people have tried to do in every sport is and every year is try to take the greatest stuff and then abuse it. They abuse it by trying to make it, you know, more continual. All the time, you know, and that's the problem. You know, we have professional sports leagues in North America and all over the world that have lasted for a long period of time, and they have really created a sophisticated system of wins and losses, team play, point structure, playoff structure, championships, and it's taken them a long time to get to this point. And now what we're trying to do is tear it down every once in a while, and I don't If it's money inequality, then that's an issue that has to be addressed. And that seems to be in the end what's the end goal of everybody is making sure that, you know, do the athletes, do the players get most of the money, and the owners who have allegedly have billions in the bank because of it, you know, share it a bit better. But, you know, there's lots of times when, you know, status quo is good.
Let me ask a question of you two guys. Do you think LIV will be around 3 years from now? because if you read the internet, there's almost a story a day about some problem with Liv, something that's going wrong. Somebody said something. These two guys were talking. You know, this on the surface, it looks like it's a stable environment. I assume that we have thought that financially it would be questionable whether the Saudi fund would continue to put this kind of money in it. And that's come apart a little bit. But really, there's an indication that, you know, it's not paradise over there. There are lots of problems. Now, do you think those stories are legitimate or are those PGA-inspired stories?
I think it's probably both. I think if Liv wants to live for three more years, I think they need a moment, if that makes sense. They need something that.
What if a Liv player won a major? Would that be it?
I don't think it'd be one though. I think it would have to be consistent for a couple of years. There are more Liv players winning majors than PGA Tour players. Right. I think there needs to be some sort of shift in popularity, and I think the only way you get that is by having, like I said, having a moment like that, like you said, where the Liv players are all of a sudden they're taking over. And I don't know if I could see that happening.
Yeah.
See, I don't think we have a feel for Liv outside of North America yet.
Right.
You know.
Well, you're right.
And so. Could Liv exist 3 years from now? Sure. You know, they've already bought the Asian Tour. They're developing golf courses all the time. It might be a bigger challenge for our pal Pelly's Tour for sure than it is the PGA Tour. And is there room for two that have North America as one side and the rest of the world as the other? Probably. And that might be where Liv ends up living.
Is it to Liv's advantage then, do you think, to have this different kind of format with teams, 54 holes, shotgun start? Like those are dramatically different things. It means they aren't really in competition other than the game of golf with the PGA Tour.
I think that's how it would have to be framed, though, by Liv. I think the fact that they're trying to make it seem like they want to replace the PGA and they want to just take over the PGA is hurting them, because like what you just said, they're essentially creating a whole different quote unquote sport.
Sure.
So I think that muddies the water a little bit, in my opinion, because they're saying this is golf, but then you're showing people who have watched golf their whole life. You're showing them this crazy concept, and people can't get behind that. So I think if it was branded or marketed in a way where this is a new golfing experience, or this is the something else like that, it would work better for them.
Maybe, but don't you have to have a consumer that wants something different?
Right. I think.
You mean you can't just put something out there and say, "Yeah, watch this. This is better." I don't think it is.
Well, you'd be better off
with a 72-hole tournament.
You better be entertaining. If you're going to try to change the rules of the game and the way viewers sports fans, you better be able to change the game. I mean, the best example of this of any of the team sports that had rival leagues was the ABA. You know, the American Basketball Association changed the sport of basketball with one thing. Changed the sport of basketball forever with one thing, and that was the three-point line.
But that's really the only difference. The game times were the same length. You know, USFL, the American Football League.
But those all played the same rules, the same thing.
I know that's what I'm saying. I think that's...
And that's my point, is there has to be a point of differentiation that people, Bob, simple point of differentiation that people understand. Like you can have the shotgun start. I don't know how that affects the way I watch the game. You know, the team sport thing, I don't understand it. So I'm not interested in it. So it doesn't turn my crank as much. The 3-point line changed the way I watch the game.
Simple.
Well, simple.
Sure.
Simple.
I get that. But that was not a league that was successful on its own. It was incorporated into the National Basketball Association, I understand. And the NBA brought with those teams the three-point shot.
What also happened was, let's face it, both leagues were on the verge of bankruptcy. Both leagues, the ABA and the NBA, were on the verge of bankruptcy. And the biggest problem was the most electric stars of the time were in the ABA. That's Julius Erving.
But that's
was
the thing,
greatest.
John. But I think that's the thing. Look at the American Football League. The American Football League, which a good portion of which was incorporated right into the NFL. What were there? I can't remember how many teams. Nine teams?
No, 10 teams joined in 1967.
And the merger
that occurred in 1970.
How many dramatic rule changes came with that? None.
But they started to recruit players. That's right.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
The quality of their play week to week was much better. It got to be not quite the parallel of the NFL, but pretty damn close. And the ABA had that situation too. Look at the leagues that haven't made it. The USFL had a couple chances and didn't make it. The XFL is trying again now. This is their second time around, I think. And they're not going to make it. That's why I'm not sure that LIV is going to survive.
Yeah, I don't, 3 years from now is a long period of time, but I would suggest that my gut says that LIV will exist. I'm trying to avoid saying LIV will live, but LIV will exist, but not in North America. It will live everywhere else.
Oh, really?
Because there's enough money and enough love of the game around the world to create a second league.
And you think the DP Tour, the European Tour, is the one that's in peril?
It will get cannibalized. I fear, just because we know people, I fear that it will be cannibalized. Yes.
Yeah.
So you may be right. If LIV were to stay outside of North America, what would would that bring them?
I don't think it can survive.
Oh, I'm just thinking, too, the players, I feel like a lot of the incentive of the players, too, is the fact that they can play in North America.
Well, sure. How much of the LIV Tour is in the United States? Half?
Last year was half.
Half.
They had seven in the States last year.
Yeah, so, and look, that's where the fans are. You watch a DP Tour event, I don't care where you are. Are you going to see, 100,000 people? I mean, forget Phoenix, because Phoenix is crazy. But an average DP Tour event draws a fraction of a PGA Tour event.
Yeah, but that's where the deep pockets of the Saudis comes in.
Well, yeah, but ultimately this is the part of this that I don't understand, is what is their motivation? Everything they did was based on the premise that we can win. And that's what Greg Norman sold them, is that they could be the number one tour in the world. And they would, and even with the kind of money they were playing the players, they could make money. They themselves, the Saudis, could make money. And I think they were way wrong. And so far I've been proven to be right, because they're not making money.
Maybe to go full circle on our discussion, all it would take is for Tiger to sign. Now, Tiger's not going to sign, but if Tiger signed with LIV and played two years on LIV,
I don't disagree, John. It'd give them a bump, but it wouldn't make the tour.
Yeah,
because Tiger can't play more than five or six times a year.
No, I know.
That's all he can play, and Tiger isn't the guy he once was, and that would get old.
But what would be
interesting is how many people who have never had a chance to see Tiger would now go and see him.
And that's why I'm not sure it matters how good a golfer Tiger is.
We got to take another break, guys. We're coming down to the end. You're listening to the Bob McCowan Podcast, and we'll be back in a moment.
When was the last time everyone agreed on what's for dinner? You want Chinese food, they want pizza, and someone is always craving Froyo. Well, there's something for everyone on DoorDash. Ordering is easy. Open up the DoorDash app, choose what you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with our default contactless delivery setting. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BOBCAST23. That's 25% off, up to $10 in value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BOBCAST23. Don't forget, that's code BOBCAST23 for 25% off of your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply.
We've been kind of going all over the map here today. It's McCown and Shannon and our producer, Hugh McClarty.
I think we should change the name. I think we should change the name. This is the Hugh McClarty podcast.
That's what I've been waiting for.
I think we should change it. I would think we should change the name.
Well, the two of you can wait together in another room by yourselves.
It's branching out.
Well, you know, we're just happy you're here, Bob. We're just happy.
I'm happy I'm here today. We had a, our friends at Rogers decided.
No, don't. Do not slag Rogers. Well, don't slag Rogers.
I'm not slagging. I'm telling the truth.
Yeah. Well, don't slag Rogers.
I can't help it if they don't know what they're doing. How is that my fault?
Okay. All right.
They decided to fix whatever it was that was broken, and they broke the internet today. So we lost our guest. In any event.
No, we didn't. We got our pal Huey. We got our pal Huey on the show. Come on.
All right. So what do you get? Once a week now? Twice a week?
He's gonna demand equal time, you know? So
yeah.
It's not equal time, it's equal money that I'm worried about.
You'll see something from my lawyer in your email, Bob. So just keep your eye on that.
Tell your lawyer to write somebody else who gives a damn. It's never not the NFL season. We've said that before, but the truth of the matter is the same. We are months and months away from an NFL season. We got a baseball year to get through, but we do have stories. Rodgers going to the Jets has been a story, you know, for the last couple of months. It hasn't actually happened yet, not officially. Do you care?
Not one bit.
Yeah, Rodgers at this point, isn't he yesterday's newspaper?
Yeah,
and he's an old quarterback who used to be really good. Well, we've gone through a lifetime of guys like that.
You know, I'll tell you what, he can still throw the ball, Bob. He can still throw the ball. You know, I suspect
he's not Brady.
In fact, there was another former Packer quarterback that ended up with the Jets for a short period of time, in Brett Favre. This is comparable to in many ways maybe what happened with Favre there, but I still think you give Aaron Rodgers a couple of quality receivers, he's going to make you pay. He really is. He's going to make you pay.
What makes you say that? I mean, historically, he has not led the Green Bay Packers to anything in the last few years.
He won the Super Bowl. Yeah. No, but every time that they got close to being, you know, a quality team, they wouldn't pay over the threshold and ended up losing the receivers. I mean, his receiving core the last two or three years has gone through the cycle wash.
He's an old quarterback that's on his way out. You know what great quarterbacks do? They make great wide receivers. That's what happens. How many great wide receivers have there been in football that haven't had a great quarterback to throw to them? Anyone. Name one.
Well, that's a chicken and an egg thing, Bob.
Well, you're right. Exactly true. But don't tell me about Rodgers' wide receivers not being great. If he's great, then he makes them great. That's what happens. That's exactly what happens.
So you're suggesting the Jets are wasting their money?
Sure. Well, I don't know if it's their money that they're going to give up. They're going to give up a draft choice. And I am told...
No, but they have to pay him $50 million.
Well, they'll do that. That's, you know...
That's what I'm saying. $50 million.
But the rumor is that the Jets will give up their second-round draft choice for Aaron Rodgers. Now, does that sound like a fair deal? What did Houston...
That tells me the Packers just want to get rid of him.
That's the boat I'm in. I think they're just happy to get rid of him. I'm on more of a page. He's been more of a headache for the Packers organization than help.
Who was the young quarterback they drafted a couple of years ago who they haven't been able to play?
Love?
Yeah, I guess that's the guy.
Yeah.
I don't know what his situation is, but maybe they're just ready to give him a try, and they couldn't do it while Rodgers was there.
Yeah, Jordan Love. I think that was the plan when they drafted him. And I remember when they drafted Jordan Love, Rodgers didn't have a contract yet, if I remember correctly. And there was kind of a bit of a tiff between that because they drafted a good quarterback and they still had Rodgers.
Yeah.
Which is what they did with Rodgers when they had Favre.
Yeah.
And then Aaron Rodgers sat on the sideline for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, so, I don't know. The quarterback carousel in the NFL has been interesting to see this year with Garoppolo moving, with Derek Carr going to the Saints.
None of that excites me, though.
What is Garoppolo? Garoppolo was supposed to be a star when he went from New England to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Well, he was good. He was okay, but he wasn't the great quarterback everybody thought he was going to be.
Well, people only thought that because he played behind Tom Brady. I don't think anyone had a sample size of.
No, but the year that Brady got hurt, Garoppolo did come in and
he did
got
him
to the playoffs. Right. Got him to the playoffs. But I think that's probably a fair question, Bob. The quarterback carousel right now. It just because I'm convinced now it's not because of talent. It's just because of money. You know, they just don't want to pay Derek Carr. You know, Derek Carr leaves Vegas because they don't want to pay that giant bonus that he was supposed to get on the day. I mean, that's what it's all about. And the same thing. I think the same thing with a lot of guys. The NFL is now so driven. The non-guaranteed contract. The non-guaranteed contract hasn't changed anything, but it really has put the player at a time where there's no loyalty to the club anymore.
Well, the non-guaranteed contract really is impactful in terms of longevity,
right,
of the deal.
Right. Look at Ezekiel Elliott, not a quarterback, but look at Ezekiel Elliott not being a Dallas Cowboy anymore. I mean,
no, I know.
That wouldn't happen in any other sport, I don't think.
But how much did Ezekiel Elliott make in his best year? What, one quarter of what the quarterback made? About?
Yeah, well, you know, running backs in the National Football League are a dime a dozen, right?
They have no value anymore.
Right.
There was a time, and we've talked about this, where quarterbacks always are near the top of the draft, but running backs were there too. A running back was a highly sought after commodity in the National Football League. And today, the opinion is they're just another guy. It doesn't matter.
Because they've got a low shelf life of actual elite production if you're a running back.
Well, who's the best running back? Who's the best running back in the NFL today? Since Jim Brown played in the 1950s, you could have said in every era, at every time, you could name who you thought was the best running back.
Sure.
Could you not?
Yeah.
There are a bunch of great ones. A bunch of them. Now, you and I might not have agreed, but we would be down to two or three guys we would say are the best. Right now, I wouldn't even wager a guess. Wouldn't even wager a guess.
Now a lot of that too is because the game has changed so much, right?
Of course,
it's become such a throwing league. You know, the quarterback touches the ball so much, and the days of running 80 plays, 40 running plays, and 40 passes is now, 60-20, if that.
When's the last time a running back carried the football 25 or 30 times in the game?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Derrick Henry, probably the only guy.
Derrick Henry.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah.
And look at Derrick Henry's shelf life. He was so big and so dominant for that short window, right?
Mm.
And, you thought he could you know, could, but he can't last forever. It's the damage that his body and the blows his body took to, in order to do the job. You know, he sits on the IR longer now.
They also had to design the whole offense around him too. Like they had to cater everything towards Derrick Henry. And I don't think that's efficient if you're an NFL team.
Who was the coach, John, that said like three things can happen when you throw the football and two of them are bad?
I don't know.
I can't remember if that was a college coach or not.
Sounds like something Bud Wilkerson would say.
Sounds like something Woody Hayes would say.
Maybe Woody Hayes, yeah.
It was Woody Hayes. Just looked it up.
Was it Woody Hayes?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Three things can happen when you throw the football, and two of them are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but viewers...
Just ask Pete Carroll.
And the interesting thing was it wasn't that long afterwards that Arch Schliester came along and changed Ohio State football. Because Schliester was a guy who had a great arm.
I can pretend like I recognize this.
I can't believe you brought up Arch Schliester's name on this show.
He'll always be in my head.
What number did he wear?
Because I don't remember that.
10.
Was it? Steve, yeah. Look at you. You know as much as I do.
No, but Arch Schliester, come on. I saw Arch Schliester play in Ottawa.
Do you remember I don't know if it was Sports, it's probably Sports Illustrated. There's a picture of Arch Schliester throwing a football through a tire on his knees.
No.
I don't know if you saw that from about 40, 50 yards away.
Tell you what, you're going to show my age. I still remember Sport Magazine. Do you remember Sport Magazine,
Bob? I sure do.
And on the front cover was Schliester, Plunkett, Manning, and somebody else, all coming out of college the same year. I forget who the fourth guy was, like in 1970 or 71. It was a pretty good group. But yeah. Plunkett was at Stanford. Plunkett won the Heisman, and then it took him at least 6 or 7 years to finally get to a place where he was a successful quarterback. So,
yeah.
That's our reminiscing 50 years ago story, Huey. So we do that every once in a while on this show.
Oh, I know that.
Are you telling me, Huey, that you have never heard of Arch Schliester?
No.
Most people hadn't heard of Arch Schliester.
Yeah, that's not true. Most young people. I guess
go to commercial and Google it, you know?
We don't have another commercial, do we?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We have one more break.
Yeah. We got to take one more break. All right, let's do it now. And go look up Arch Schliester. We'll be back. We are back. Not for very long, right, Hugh? Just yeah, 3 minutes left.
3 minutes. We got it.
I don't think Hugh should get used to being on the show, though. It started to make too much sense. I mean, we can't have people, you know, not being crabby old men on this show. This is not going to work very well. You know, my goodness gracious.
What would you like to talk about, John, in the last few minutes?
Well, this is the longest time we've gone on a show, a long time without me talking about hockey for a little bit, you know?
I was just waiting for you to say something. I was waiting for
hockey. What are you going to say about hockey? Go ahead.
I did a game last night that had four video reviews in it. I mean, it was crazy. Two offside goals and two goalie interference calls. I'd never seen that in my life before. You know, it's technology saving the game from itself. So and they did the right thing. All four of them were the correct call. You know, you couldn't argue with them. And it was something I don't think we, you know, that's so there were two San Jose, who played a heck of a game in Edmonton last night. San Jose had two goals called offside. They had one goalie interference, and then the Oilers had a goalie interference call that was the right call too. And, you know, there was a time when I was not a big advocate for technology and video review, but man, last night was the perfect advertisement for how technology can save a sport from itself.
So if those calls overturned, John, would that have changed the game significantly?
Oh, San Jose would have won. San Jose would have won the game.
Okay.
Yeah, no. San Jose would have won the game. The Oilers still have some issues in goal with Jack Campbell, and San Jose would have scored earlier. Yeah, I know. Well, he won last night now, Bob. See, he won.
What? What was the score?
No. 5-4 in overtime.
Thank you. Can you give me four goals?
Hey, listen, if you score more goals than the other guy, you get the win.
I get it.
Isn't that just like the Grant Fuhr Oilers too?
It was. Almost overrated goaltender in history.
Oh.
I didn't mean to bring that up.
We have the crabby old man back. It's great. Yeah. Just before the show ends.
I got no issue with Grant Fuhr as a person. I know
you
him.
You do have an issue with him as a goaltender. He's in the Hall of Fame.
The most overrated in the Hall of Fame. Give me a break. The guy was ordinary at best.
Oh, Robert. Oh.
What was his goals against average for his career? 2.1.
I don't know.
2. What?
I think it might even be over 3.
I guarantee you it's over 3. It might be over 4.
No, it's not over 4. Okay.
Has a higher goals against average that's in the Hall of Fame? Name me one.
We'll have that answer tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. You look it up. You give me the guy.
They probably don't have more cups. Probably don't have more Stanley Cups.
That's right. Okay, so the good news is the crabby old man is back, and we'll be back tomorrow, right, Bob?
All you got to do is bring up that name, Fuhr, and I'll get going. I don't know what game you were watching back then, but you forgot.
I weren't paying attention. Yeah, no, I wasn't paying attention. I was just producing them all.
They didn't win. They didn't win every game. 1-0. I got news for you because of Grant Fuhr. They won 8-7. They had to score 8 because of Fuhr.
Say goodbye.
Right. We got to go now. Thank God this is over. Huey, you did a nice job. Congratulations, pal.
Thank you.
Now go back to work.
Yeah.
Don't get used to it.
No, Shannon,
are you still in Edmonton, right?
Yeah.
You're such a homer. we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Wait till I go to Winnipeg.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.